Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here. It's about 4 minutes past the hour and it is hour two of our show. It was a great first hour with Hugh Welchel and Ben Johnson talking about so many of the different headlines of the day politically and economically. And as we start hour two here on a Thursday, it means that Dr. Jim Bilby, professor of Christian theology at Bethel University, is joining us as he does every Thursday. And we answer your questions that you can ask by calling in or texting the studio at any time this morning at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And Jim, I know you and I are going to be talking about New Year's resolutions here in just a moment, but did you have a good New Year, good holiday time with your family?
I did have a very enjoyable time. It was fun to get all the family back in the same country and hang out. It was a blast, Peter.
Well, and I know before the holidays, we actually had your daughter, Sierra, join us here on Faith Radio Mornings to talk a little bit about studying overseas and what it meant for her to be in France and in England and just the expansive experience that that was. How has her adjustment period, there can be a bit of a reverse culture shock. We don't often think of America sort of being its own unique place. We just kind of swim in these waters each day. But it's a very different way of life in America than it is in the rest of the world.
Yeah, she wanted to go back.
She did.
She missed being able to just jump on the train and get to where all of her, you know, wherever she needed to go. And but I think she's a Minnesota girl. I think she'll slide into it just fine.
Yeah, you do reference that. It's something I didn't understand in terms of the proximity of different places in which you go in Europe. I'm used to just driving maybe 10, 15, 20 miles on a given day somewhere and not thinking much about it. But at least when we lived in Scotland and France is much the same way, to travel 10 miles is really, you pack a lunch and you maybe think about getting a hotel room for the night. It's a very different experience.
It is, very much so. I mean, everything there is just so much more condensed and so much closer together. And so you'll jump to this train and then switch to another train and you'll be where you need to be. But ultimately, you've only gone about 3 miles, 2 miles as the crow flies.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting the way we travel in our cars. Of course, we've got 5 kids, you've got 4. I know that in our friendship the last 15 years, the van is part and parcel to our experience traveling around as a family. But Jim, I mean, we strap our kids in the van and we try to entertain them just to get those 15, 20 miles. And it's part of what I appreciated in Europe was just walking places with my kids, holding their hand, having conversations, getting on the bus together. Are there things that we can do as parents with our kids rather than just strap them in the van and throw a screen in front of them to somehow duplicate or approximate that relational experience?
Well, it's difficult when you're in a van and you're facing forward and trying to avoid oncoming traffic and all that sort of thing. But the one thing that as a parent I would say is that as much as possible, ban screens in the car, right? Give them an opportunity to look out the window and see where they're going. Give them an opportunity to talk to their siblings. Give them an opportunity to talk with their parents. Screens in the car, I get it. You know, just, you know, it's almost like kitty crack cocaine, right?
Yeah, it is.
Give them something to make them happy for a little bit. But ultimately, I think it's a dangerous thing, and it's just very popular in our culture. And again, I get it. No guilt trips being laid on anybody who use that, because I certainly would as well. But I think it's actually really toxic to the family atmosphere of just being in this together. We're going somewhere together, even if dad or mom are the ones driving up front.
Yeah, and it may sound like a silly suggestion, but even the idea of all listening to the same music as opposed to everybody having their own set of individualized headphones when we're traveling around like that, there's something about the commonality of the music experience. I know growing up, you and me, whatever was on the radio was what everybody was listening to, but there was a shared experience relative to that then. And so it could be a practice just as simple as, hey, for 10 minutes on this 30-minute trip, we're going to all listen to the same music together.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really cool. I'm not sure my kids want to listen to my music, but...
Your Swedish death metal is not something that really makes its way through the family?
Well, you know, I've tried my best, but I may be failing in that respect.
I love it. Well, Rachel, you're saying that your family does some audiobooks from time to time in the car. Is that another way? Because you have a large family as well, or you came from a large family. Another shared mm-hmm. experience possibility?
Yeah, they listen to an audiobook, and especially those long drives if you're going somewhere far away. But even if you're just doing a couple minutes around town, you can get little chapters here and there.
I love it. Well, the Jesus Storybook Bible, I know, made its way through a lot of our road trips as a family, and just this idea of the shared experience. Well, Jim, great to see you back in studio. We'll take a short break here. When we come back, our first question in the morning will have to do with New Year's resolutions and what it means to engage with them from our own willpower, but also invite God's sort of authority and his ability into that as well as we look for some transformative changes in our life. So more to come with Jim Bilby here on Faith Radio Mornings. Past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Jim, is that officially the walk-up music? Do we finally settle on something here as we start 2019 that is going to introduce you into the show? Was that the right one?
I think it's pretty good, isn't it?
That's pretty solid.
We like it, so yeah. I think it works.
Yeah, you were talking during the break about shared music that we referenced in our first little segment there with the family. You suggested that your kids are not going to make a lot of headway with you listening to, was it Cardi B? I'm sorry, my music relevance is so low. I mean, what do your kids listen to these days?
Well, I mean, I think there's a whole range of things. My kids will occasionally listen to some pop music, you know, like Cardi B, Kanye sort of things. But my daughter Maddie tends to listen to country music, and there's absolutely no chance that I'm going to go over to that. I actually really like Rachel's suggestion of audiobooks. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, it can be a good shared experience that way. Well, it is New Year's, and I know you and I were talking this week a little bit about what we can cover this morning. And New Year's resolutions, obviously, is top of the mind. Did you make any New Year's resolutions this year? Has that ever really been part of your own sort of rhythm as you enter into a new year?
Yeah, you know, it hasn't been, but this year I'm thinking, considering it a little bit more. I've always resisted the idea because why is January 1 somehow more magical in terms of making a decision to follow Christ better, to love my neighbor better, to eat better, right? I mean, this idea, it sort of seems false, and then you forgot it by, you know, February 1 or, let's be honest, January 3rd or
That's
whatever,
when I
right?
forget, absolutely.
So I've always resisted it, but there is a season for kind of renewed thought about, you know, where I want to be and where am I and how do I get there? And if, you know, New Year's is an occasion to think intentionally about that, then perhaps it's not a bad thing. So I actually have some things that I'm going to try to do surrounding my eating habits that I'm going to try to make some changes on. Some of that sort of stuff that I think I am trying to. New Year's resolution-ish,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, and do we set ourselves up for failure sometimes, Jim, a bit when we sort of approach these things and say, today, through our own free will, we're going to go for it, and I'm going to have enough willpower this year, and then we begin to fail, maybe sometimes around January 10th, 11th, 12th, and whatever that resolution is, and there can be this guilt associated with it. And so is there a sense in which if we just try to do it all ourselves that we're setting ourselves up for failure?
Well, I think that is the case, but I also think we set ourselves up for failure if we, as Christians, go, well, I'm just going to let God do this. Funny, I've noticed that God hasn't done a lot to directly affect my diet or these sorts of things. And maybe you could say, well, God doesn't care about my diet. But any sort of approach that the way we as Christians think about this has to be a robust both and between what we are trying to do, you know, with our own free will, with our own decisions, with creating our own sorts of habits, and relying on God to work through us, right? So anytime you go, well, I'm just doing it all myself, you're probably setting yourself up in a dangerous way. But if you just sit back, okay, God, help me have better eating habits, I'm going to suggest it's not going to work for you. So it has to be, again, this robust both and. And I think probably the best way to think about this is just as we as Christians think about how our Christian life isn't just us and God, it's us and people, you know, so we walk with people, we, you know, love the Lord God with heart, soul, and mind, and your neighbors yourselves. This is this robustly communal thing. I think probably the best way to think about New Year's resolutions is to think about a community of people that you can come around with respect to this. So my daughter Maddie is her major. She has a lot of interest in working out, and she has a biokinetics major, and so working out and the body and nutrition and things like that. And so she is somebody who I am, is my community surrounding some of my decisions and New Year's resolutions. So that strikes me as a more effective way than this let go and let God approach to our New Year's resolutions.
Well, I think that's such an important point. And you talk about just sort of the agencies around us if we really want to engage with our resolutions is, yes, there is an internal act of will that we bring to play. But there's also, then you said, the community around us in which it involves their support and engagement, and then God's agency as well. And, Jim, it brings to mind a passage from Philippians that I don't know that I fully understand, but certainly reference often. And it's the idea where God is saying, work out your salvation in fear and trembling, for it is God who's at work in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. And so I'm hearing this work out your salvation, which we should talk about that a little bit, about what it means to work out your salvation, because I thought salvation was free and graceful and all of that, combined with the agency of God. So what do we see in this interplay in this Philippians passage?
Yeah, I mean, so again, this. I think that you have there is a great example of the robust both and. You have both things happening there. Yes, it is. There's this, the idea of sitting on the couch and let God working in us where we don't do anything is nonsensical. And the biblical writers would have thought that to be not just just bad theology, but literally incoherent. So we have to be working and drawing toward God and seeking to do the things that would make him happy and following his commandments and all of those things, right? But as we do that, our mindset has to be, I'm not doing this because I'm so spectacular and I'm climbing this moral ladder. We have to realize that it is God that's working through us, because God is the source of every good thing.
Mm.
So ultimately, the reason why we can desire the good, the reason why we can desire God, we can desire to love our neighbor more, is our response to the Holy Spirit working in us.
Well, and I think that's such an incredibly important point about the transformative power of God relative to that. We got to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to get your perspective on some of that idea about what it means to experience some kind of life change where we maybe are not just doing through an act of will or through a habit. We really are changing as people as God changes the way we view the world. So that's the voice of Jim Bilby. And again, if you want to join the conversation or ask any kind of question this morning, you can call or text the studio at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And more to come up next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Dr. Jim Bilby on our Thursday morning Ask Anything segment. And we're talking about New Year's resolutions this morning and how to maybe best think about these things so that they're sustainable in our lives, not just on January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, but into January 10th. And maybe even, Jim, dare we say it, the rest of our life, what does it mean to make a resolution that actually could become something that marks our lives moving forward? And we were talking during the break about an example that I had in my own life of feeling pretty convicted that I didn't really have much compassion in my life, maybe sometime in my early 30s. And it could almost be, well, I'm going to go ahead and just give a bunch of money here and a bunch of money there. But what I soon discovered, Jim, is that my act of willpower to give that money wasn't matched really by a heart of compassion. It was sort of just now doing these things from almost a rote standpoint. And there's maybe some things we need to think about in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, just merely doing things that a compassionate person would do doesn't always lead us to being compassionate, right? Because the tendency is to think of these things as boxes we need to check off.
Yeah.
And to the degree those are boxes we need to check off, then you can check off as many boxes as you want. You're not going to become a compassionate person. Now, if you set out with a goal of being a compassionate person, then that's going to interestingly draw you to do those things. But notice, when you do those things with the goal of actually loving people and actually thinking of their best, now you're not thinking about yourself and the boxes you're checking off. You're thinking about them. And so shifting our focus away from us and ourselves, making ourselves what we're becoming, right? You know, grabbing the bull by the horns and doing all these great things is actually the crucial thing. And I think it harkens back to the Philippians verse, right? That we have to give up this this illusion of control and realize that it's God that's working through us.
Well, and I think when we resolve to just do something new in our lives and we're the ones that are the only agent relative to it, it brings to mind the story of the disciple Peter, who says, "I will never deny you. I will never deny you." And I sort of have this vision of him with this huge act of willpower making this resolution, and then the rooster crows. How many times does that happen in our life, right? Where I make a resolution, I'm not going to eat, or I'm going to eat better, or something like that, and then my rooster moment is I roll through a bag of Cheetos.
Yeah, no, and that is just simply so common, because what we do is when we say, "I will not do this," or "I will do this," or whatever it will be, we don't create any structure surrounding that to build the habit, to become the sort of person that does that, not just today, but tomorrow, and eventually, ideally, out of a character that we've developed. And that needs to be the thing that we aim toward, that we're not just doing things, we're trying to create character that does these things instinctually.
Hmm. And is character just a matter of habits that we do, Jim, or is it something that actually shifts in our interior world where we see the world differently? Because if it's the latter, that means the process towards that kind of character development might involve questions like, so why do I feel the need to eat the way that I do? Or why do I feel the need to have that third glass of wine at night? Or why do I feel the need to do X, Y, Z? It sounds like, as opposed to just, I'm going to make it a habit today, that there's maybe a different invitation into the kind of questions we're asking.
Absolutely. I think it is just, it's this fundamentally interior thing that defines our being, right? And again, it can't be just a function of these simple things that we do. It is an invitation to a different holistic way of engaging the world. And I'm not saying you're a different person, but there's a very real sense in which you change.
And because there can be a situation where we might be doing the work of the kingdom, but might not be doing it through a heart of love or care of other people. It just can be rote obedience. And I don't know my Bible from start to finish, all the different verses, but it seems like the common theme in the text is to do these things without any kind of heart of love really defeats the purpose of what we're invited into.
Yeah, actually, there's some very scary verses in Scripture about doing just that. I mean, Matthew 7, right? The passage that should petrify every Christian, where these people say, "Hey, God, we cast out demons in your name. We perform miracles in your name." And his words were, "I never knew you."
Yeah.
So in other words, whoever you were doing that for, it wasn't me. It was for yourself. It was for your own glory. It was for whatever it would be. And so the question of what do you do is, yes, it's an important question, but why do you do what you do? Out of what motivation, and where is that coming from? That might be the more fundamental question.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think we've got a caller here, Frank from South St. Paul, who's on the line here at this point. Jim, are you ready for a question from one of our listeners?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's have it. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Peter. I've got a double feature for you.
Sure, let's have it.
You'll probably do a whole segment on these two. I think it says in Psalm 90, "Teach us, Lord, to number our days." And also, of course, it is written, "I can do all things through Christ Jesus who strengthens me." Now, those seem to suggest boundaries, but also unlimited capabilities. So, any comments?
Frank, I think that's a great question here. And Jim, as we write down some notes for next week about digging into this much more so, what Frank is referencing is there's a number of our days. It seems like God has a bit of authority and control in our lives, and yet we can do all things. So how do we bring these things together? Any quick comments before we wrap things up for this morning?
Well, it seems to me that I don't think you have anything like a contradiction there. To number our days is to be aware of who we are as finite persons, but also to then pay attention to. I think that's a pay attention to the passage of time. Don't just slip into these habits and not be intentional, right? But the notion of I can do all things through Christ who strengthened me, of course, we don't mean all things, right?
Right.
Because not even God can do all things. Scripture, even though God is all powerful, Scripture is very clear. There's some things that God cannot do.
Hmm.
God cannot lie.
Yeah.
Right? I would add to that, God cannot be evil, God cannot sin. So the notion of doing all things is just as it is for God, under an umbrella of God can do all things that fit with his nature. And so for us, I can do all things. I have the capacity to do the things that God has, that fits with God nature, that God calls me to do.
Hmm.
So this, I can do all things, I can suddenly, you know, dunk a basketball again, or I can, you know, run the 100 meter dash in 9.6, or no, I actually can't, right?
I love it.
So there needs to be, you know, to understand the theological context for that.
That's a great question, Frank. We'll definitely address that next week as part of our segment. And Jim, it was people like you that wrecked my faith when I was in your theology classes back in the day. You would have questions like, can God create a rock so large that God can't move it? And maybe we'll pick up with that next week on Thursday, but Happy New Year. It's great to have you back in studio.
It's great to be here, Peter.
We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and some bottom of the hour news, and we come back for the second half of this hour in Faith Radio Mornings. We'll continue this conversation about New Year's resolutions. I'll be joined by Justin Early, who had some pretty interesting experiences in life that caused him to create some boundaries in his own life moving forward in the way that he acts in this world. So lots more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, I certainly enjoy coming into studio before the show starts, and Paul Perreault has stacks of news and different items of interest on my desk each morning, and some of those have to do with birthdays, and then scanning through that, there's one that stood out this morning, and obviously he's passed away, but writer J.R.R. Tolkien was born on this date in 1892. He is famous, of course, for penning The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, and part of what I love about those stories is these creatures get dropped in the middle of a much larger story, and they have to figure out their way in the midst of that and what they're called. Calling is on that, and I think so often that we are dropped into this beautiful story of Christian faith. Our lives are short, and yet there is purpose, and there's function, and there's part of being part of the past and part of the future in which we engage. So happy birthday to J.R.R. Tolkien this morning. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, good friend of the program, Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com, came on the program, and he gave some challenges for 2019 for business leaders.
You walk around America, and people, I promise you, most people do not have anybody in their life that unconditionally loves them.
Yeah.
And most people rarely hear anybody say, hey, thank you. Thanks for doing a good job. Thanks for thinking that through. Thanks for anticipating this. And so you know what you can do to build your staff up? Nothing else. Just go around and thank them every day. Now, you don't have to thank each person each day, but take stuff that's genuinely real, that's good, that they have done or that they have said, and thank them for it. Make it genuine, and you will find the loyalty of your staff going through the roof.
Bill was talking about the importance yesterday of simply walking around and thanking and having displaying some gratitude for the people around you and how important that is for building morale as an organization. That was one of four tips he had. And if you want to catch his entire segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com and search for Bible and Business or Bill English and hear all of what he had to say yesterday. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, I'll be joined by speaker and author Justin Early, who released a book called The Common Rule. And it was a response to some of the things in his life as he was trying to be a father and growing a career and really began to melt down with some anxiety relative to that. And something I think all of us can identify with on some level. So Justin has some great tips for us about how to create a life moving forward that is free from anxiety.
Sometimes it's hard to express love. When a teen breaks your trust, when she does the thing you've always told her not to do, it's never easy to give a forgiving embrace. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I'm very quick to acknowledge that parenting can bring some of the lowest lows of life. Sometimes it feels utterly impossible to forgive after a child has broken your heart, especially an out-of-control teen. But in that moment, the moment when you feel least able to move toward the person who hurt you, ask God to give you His grace. It's only with the love of God that we can love our kids in the darkest moment. Are you ready to embrace the sinner before you? Do it by the grace and strength of God.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Check out his latest resources online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org. That's ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we're joined at this time by author and speaker Justin Early, who has a very interesting book that we thought we could delve into a bit as we start the new year here relative to resolutions and thinking about how we can engage with some of these practices for 2019. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Well, doing well, and thinking about these resolutions for the new year, Justin, and you have an interesting book called The Common Rule. It sounds very Benedictine. Tell us a little bit about the book.
It is somewhat Benedictine, in fact. Yeah, that's right. The book is about 8 habits, 4 daily and 4 weekly habits. And the book is written because I came to believe that habits form us more than we form them. Usually we think about making our habits, and I sort of came to realize that our habits make us. So you got to choose them really carefully.
And for you, in terms of bringing this book into being, it really did develop out of your own life. You talk a bit about being a nonprofit worker in China, and as you're trying to become a lawyer and be a good father, and some of what I think many of us experience in life, it didn't always go so well. So tell us a little bit about the background to this.
Yeah, sure. So after I graduated college, I spent about 5 years as a missionary in China, and then I had a sort of calling experience on the streets of China when I saw a political protester dragged from the streets, and I, long story short, thought I was called to become a lawyer and work in the space of law and business. So I came back to the States with a calling. I was, you know, a missionary. I saw my work as a missionary. But what I found that had happened is that the process of law school and working at a big law firm actually converted me. And I ended up in my first year of lawyering breaking down with terrible panic attacks and anxiety. I thought everything was going fine. I'd done really well in law school and gotten a great job. I'd had 2 kids. So things were going really well until suddenly it came crashing down. And what I came to realize in retrospect was that while I had this great worldview of how to be a missionary within my career, and I had a real calling, the habits of my life and the sort of architecture of my life looked exactly like everybody else's. And I had sort of assimilated to the usual way of life in America, the usual way of life in law schools and lawyering, which is really, now that I've done a lot of thinking about this, it's really designed to make you anxious. It's designed to make you lonely. It's designed to make you depressed. And so there, I had a point around New Year's. It was probably 4 years ago now, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, where some of my friends sat down with me because they loved me and cared about me and wanted to see me get better. And they said, you need to start living according to, you know, some different daily routines because the way that you're living is driving you crazy. And so that was when I started these habits that I now found not only changed my life, but ended up becoming a book to write.
Well, and I want to get into some of those habits too in just a minute, Justin, but going back to something that you said that I think is pretty important to mine into a little bit is you referenced the idea that there's quite a bit of anxiety that came that really you seem to almost be set up for by American culture, by individualism and loneliness. So what do you see in that, Justin? What are some of the things that maybe we don't even know that we're engaging with day in and day out that are creating this reality of anxiety within us?
Absolutely. So when I went to China as a foreigner, I started to realize, oh, wow, this is a whole different world, and there's a whole different setup. And as a foreigner somewhere, when you're in exile, if you will, you can kind of see the water. And I think what happened is when I came back to America, I slowly began to realize that, hey, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you're a foreigner everywhere, and we're kind of in exile everywhere. And that caused me to start to back up and try to see the water. And through this process of falling apart and trying to look at the water in America, I've realized that, you know, the water we swim in is not neutral. There are 1,000 little routines, ordinary and significant, that we go through, the ways that we watch the news, the ways that we commute to work, the ways that we pack our schedules to try to accomplish more, the assumptions we have about building wealth. There are a lot of things that are actually guiding our life. And if a foreigner were to come here, or let's say an exile from the kingdom of heaven, if you will, were to come here, they would say, wow, this is a strange land with strange people in it. And it needs Jesus. It needs the gospel. And so a lot of my journey over the past couple years has been trying to look at these small daily rhythms, especially of work and technology, and ask, are they setting us up to lean us into the gospel, or are they setting us up to lean us into consumerism or vanity or injustice or anxiety and depression? And I found that largely we have a system perfectly designed to get the results it's getting. A lot of anxious, depressed, alcoholic, lonely people. And that's a great cause for concern. And as a Christian, I think we're not only called to speak the words of the gospel to this culture, but to embody a new and redeemed way of daily life that forms a lover of God and people.
Well, it's an incredible point you make, Justin, because I think oftentimes we think that all the other cultures in the world are so weird when we travel and we feel exile there. But we're actually exiles even in America. And as much as we might love our country, and for very good reasons, we do at the same time with our identity as people, as citizens of the kingdom of heaven, we're exiles wherever we go. And I think about what you just said in terms of what we orient ourselves to and the kinds of things we're doing for our resumes. It sounds like you're a father of three. Is it three or four boys at this point?
Now it's four boys.
It's four boys. Yeah,
so four boys. Our youngest is 3.5 months.
I love it. Congratulations on that. And you think about raising kids, right, Justin, in this, and how often I know that I fall into it as a parent of five children myself, thinking, well, I've got to get their resume built. I've got to help them get ahead. I've got to get them into even maybe the right band programs or right soccer teams or whatever it is at a very early age. We're setting things up in some of these ways you described very early in life, aren't we?
We are. And that's not unlike at all, I think, what I went through in my journey from law school to lawyering. And that was, my life became about a series of resume building activities, which leads to a kind of frenzy of accomplishment. Now, a lot of that can be good. I mean, we want to be excellent workers, and we want to be as good as we can at our jobs. But when life becomes about earning a place in the world to be loved, well, we've lost the gospel, because the gospel says we're loved. So now go work. But the typical routine of our jobs or even training up kids is often work hard so then you can finally be loved one day. And that's not the gospel.
Yeah, it's such an important and counter-cultural point that you're making here. And Justin, we'll come back in just a moment. I want to dig into that a little bit more and talk about some of what you describe in your book, The Common Rule, some of the habits in which we can engage that really do begin to transform the way we see the world. So more to come with author and speaker Justin Early next on Faith Radio Mornings. Back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're having an engaging conversation with Justin Early, who is an author and speaker, and he released a book called The Common Rule as a way of helping us build habits in our lives that can help mitigate against so much of the anxiety we so often feel. And Justin, I'm curious, in terms of the book and some of the principles, you've referenced it a bit already in terms of building habits. What kind of habits are we talking about here? Because I know I have a habit when I get up in the morning to grab a bowl of cereal. My wife, Hallie, loves to poke fun at me about it, that I have my cereal every single day. You know, I feel like I'm about 147 years old where I have to have the right rhythm every day, Justin, but that's not necessarily what we're talking about, right?
No, that's a habit for sure, but not one that at least I'm concerned about, depending on the cereal. I don't know.
So I
define a habit as the things that we do on autopilot, or the things that we do that we don't have to think about doing. And so let me give you an example of kind of some of my habits before my anxiety breakdown. I would generally wake up in the morning short on sleep because I never go to bed on time. And I think something going on under that habit of not sleeping enough was the assumption that I'm limitless, that my body will always be fine. The first thing I would do when I would wake up would be I would check my work email to see what was happening at the office. I think something that was going on under the hood in this autopilot habit was that I figured the most important thing about today was what people at the office thought about me and who I could make happy. I would then go rush off to breakfast, eat something on the go while all the kids get somewhere late, and then when I got to my office, I would eat at my desk. I think underneath that habit, there was an assumption that being busy is good. You know, being always on the go means you're in demand. And just one last one. So it's not even 10 a.m., and I'm keeping all the alerts on my computer and phone on and in sight. And something under the hood of that habit, I think, is thinking that meaningful work and engagement with the world happens by staying updated and always being in touch. So if I just sort of stop there, I'd say there was a routine to my day that was sort of built around limitlessness omnipresence, omniscience. It is now unsurprising to me that my body fell apart because I was living in a way that is trying to be God, not trying to be like a human. And so a lot of the habits in the common rule are developed specifically to counter that kind of limitlessness. There are habits like reading scripture before you look at your phone in the morning, turning your phone off for an hour a day, eating a meal every day with others. These are little habits that all of them kind of sound small. In fact, they are, but they're meant to be like domino effects. You begin an hour of presence by turning off your phone once a day, and it changes 10 other habits. Or you begin your day by reading scripture instead of scrolling social media, and suddenly that changes the way you approach your whole day, changes the way you approach your phone. So there are a lot of little habits like that around technology.
Well, and in terms of that too, Justin, when I hear you talk like that, it feels like the sense of you're revealing the hamster wheel that I think we can so often find ourselves on, where we're just sort of running through our day, but not actually spinning towards anything in particular. And you almost can't have the both and, right? You can't develop the certain kinds of habits you're describing in the common rule and continue to do the things that you described, like making sure you follow the news every single day or making sure that you're on your phone first thing or going to bed late. This is not a both and scenario.
No, it's not. That's a great point. I mean, I tell people I'm still a corporate lawyer. I do business law, mergers and acquisitions. It's still fairly an intense job. So I think it's made me a better worker. However, these habits are designed to make you cut out stuff. They're designed to slow you down. They're designed to help you realize that you cannot give your attention to everything. And in fact, you weren't meant to. You were meant to choose important things to give your attention to. And this, by the way, is an extremely important point. Because in the last decade, technology has revolutionized what I call and other people call the attention economy. I mean, we now live in a world where every bit of every building and every screen is paid for and designed to attract our attention and sell it to an advertiser. So we're not on a neutral playing field. People every morning, every midday, every evening are trying to get our attention in news and tweets and medias and alerts and buzzes and dings. They want us to look at something. And we got to realize that we're formed by what we look at. So we need to think carefully about what do we actually, what is good? What is just? What is holy? What is righteous? What's worth giving our attention to? And often it's as simple as realizing maybe I don't need to check that alert. Maybe I can put my phone away and play with my children. Or maybe I can not check the news and just work. And these things are not only important for our formation and being a lover of God, lover of neighbor. It's also just incredibly freeing because we're enslaved to 1,000 advertisers behind the screen trying to get our attention all the time.
Yeah, certainly. And we have a couple minutes left here, Justin, but I see it in my students that I teach year in and year out. And the rise of anxiety over the last 10 years because of some of the dynamics you just described, where there are voices shouting through our phones all day long, demanding our attention, trying to maybe get some of our money or primarily that as well, to just shut those things down over time, we do begin to experience something very different in our interior world.
We do, and I'm not a fan of being an alarmist, but I am increasingly, you know, becoming soberly concerned because the rise in anxiety, depression, suicide rates in America is at an all-time high, and the growth curve of that amongst the generation that has grown up, come of age in the iPad and the iPhone, there's an even higher rate of growth there. So it's not entirely clear, but how and why this is happening, but it's very clear that something is happening. And I think it's all the more revolutionary important to teach each other and to teach our children how to have real, authentic, face-to-face relationships, because that is actually the antidote to a lot of the problems that we have, to realize that there are people around you who are real and love you, and that there is a God who is real and who loves you. And a lot of the distraction is a distraction from that. Authentic relationship with God, authentic relationship with other people. So I'm concerned, but I'm also hopeful because we have the tools as believers to really give a lot of life back to a culture that has lost a lot of life.
Well, and I think, Justin, as a parent of now 4 boys, too, just having kids today, thinking about these things, I would love to have you back on sometime in the next couple of weeks and talk specifically about this. I know my wife and I are wondering when, if ever, do we end up getting our kids a smartphone? What does it mean to be engaged with technology? And how do we get after some of these hamster wheels? So thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for the book, The Common Rule, and would love to chat with you again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Peter.
We'll take a break here, and we'll wrap up our show on Faith Radio Mornings here for the 3rd of January. Wow, we could have spent another hour, I think, with Justin Early, especially for those of us that are parents and grandparents, thinking about what life is like in the generations that are growing up in technology. I know that the generations I'm currently teaching, there's not even the power of contrast anymore, where they lived life without a cell phone and now they have a cell phone. It just is part and parcel to life altogether. And the subsequent rise of anxiety and depression and turmoil that comes with all of it, it's not neutral. It doesn't mean we need to be alarmist, but it does mean that as believers, we can think about, as Justin said, the kinds of things that we're doing and the hamster wheels in which we run. So thanks for listening again here on Faith Radio Mornings, and look forward to waking up with you again tomorrow on the 4th of January, where we'll fix our eyes again on Jesus together.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.